Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome one and all. This is Robert Rogers, and you just connected to Parkinson's Recovery. I have an exciting show for you today for many different reasons. First, I want to make sure that everyone who is connected here today at this time and place knows that the second edition of my book, Road to Recovery from Parkinson's Disease, is actually out and hot on the press. I initially released the book last year in 2010, and in March I updated everything that you'll find in the book. It's a longer book, a richer book, and it has everything that I've actually discovered through my research over the past year as an update. You can actually get information about the book by visiting the publisher page, which is lulu.com, or you can go to the website and get incredible information about all the topics that are covered and the questions that I answer that have been asked by listeners. That particular website is www.parkinsonsdisease.me. Also, an important announcement is, those of you who are probably holding off a bit, hoping there would be some kind of discount, and lo and behold, it is April, and this is the month to celebrate all persons who are recovering from the symptoms of Parkinson's. You'll be able to get $4.99, almost $5 off of the shipping cost if you order the book through Lulu, but here's the code that I need to give everyone so that you be sure and qualify for that discount. When you get to the checkout page, there's a little field that says coupon code, and what you need to enter there is April Mail 305. So that's April, the word April as in the month of April, joined together with the word mail, M-A-I-L, and the number 305. No spaces between any of those two words or between mail and 305. So the book's out. I spent the last week editing the book, and so it's actually the first time I've had a full and complete read through the whole book. I have to tell everyone that I'm first of all surprised how long it took me to read the book. It's a long, detailed, full, and rich book. And second, I want everybody to know it really is enriched with everything anyone needs to know in order to be able to understand the factors that are causing symptoms associated with the diagnosis of Parkinson's disease and the many different natural, safe, and non-intrusive therapies that we have discovered are helping individuals get incredible and sustained relief from their symptoms. So that's Road to Recovery from Parkinson's Disease. There are no secrets that are divulged in my book. If you actually listen to the radio shows over the last couple of years, the seminar series I did a couple of years before that and actually read all the blog entries, you get the gist of pretty much everything that's in the book. So what I've done is I've really captured the wisdom of all the many incredible professionals that I have had as guests on my radio show, as well as individuals who have figured out wonderful solutions to be able to give them relief from the symptoms they are currently experiencing that are neurological in character. So Road to Recovery from Parkinson's Disease, second edition, is now out and off the press. You can, of course, also order it from Amazon. And on Amazon, they are currently, perhaps also in celebration that it's Parkinson's Month, a 5% discount off of the regular print price. And, of course, downloads are available to many of you who live in other countries. I want to now talk about the two guests that I have today on my radio show. This show interview was actually conducted 2 years ago before I actually began doing my regular live radio programs. So I know 99% of those of you who are listening to this show today have not heard this quite incredible interview. I'm airing it today for two very important reasons and for the purpose of celebrating two important realities. The first reality is that I conducted a series of 16 different interviews in conjunction with Nancy Welsh, who's a psychotherapist from Bellingham, Washington, and is a person who is incredibly knowledgeable about meditation. we went out, and with Nancy's leadership, she identified all of the individuals in the United States who are the leaders, the movers and shakers, the people who know everything there is to know about meditation. What is it? How do you do it? What's the right way? What's the wrong way? What do you get from it? What's the benefit? What's the cost if you don't do it? You name it. These interviews talk to people who had all the answers. I really know that meditation can make a huge difference to anybody who currently experiences the symptoms of Parkinson's. And I also know it's pretty much of an esoteric kind of an area. Many people are really very unaware of what meditation is, how it works, and how you actually do it. What I convinced Nancy Welsh to do is to be a collaborator and to help me be able to identify through a book everything that people needed to know in order to be able to meditate and to get sustained relief from their symptoms. This is a way to address stress in your life, and we know that stress is directly related to the symptoms of Parkinson's disease. It's now 2 years later after we did those series of 15 or 16 interviews, and Nancy Welch has munched upon the wisdom in all of the interviews that were conducted, and she has now, this week, actually released her book. It's hot off the press, too, and this particular book is titled Medicine and Meditation. It's a book by Nancy Welch. If you'd like to be able to get information about her book, and again, it's just been released this week, you can go to the following website. It's medicinemeditation.com. And there, you'll get a rich description of all that you'll find when you actually purchase her book, which really is intended for individuals who want to learn everything they need to know to be able to get on board with having a regular, a sustained, and a very effective meditation practice. So we're basically converting the esoteric nature of meditation for people so that you can really understand what it takes to be able to have a powerful and a useful and a healing meditation practice. This particular interview, then, is one of 14 or 15 that we actually engaged in the effort of facilitating the writing of Nancy Welsh's book, Medicine and Meditation. And this particular interview is with one of the individuals who you will see featured in the book, Darlene Cohen. She's a very famous author of a book titled Turning Suffering Inside Out. Darlene experienced significant pain and discomfort from arthritis, and you'll hear a discussion between Darlene and Nancy, who also experiences these very same challenges. So some of this discussion is essentially tied to the challenge of individuals who have those aches and pains that are associated with an arthritic kind of a condition. But because these particular interviews were also focused on individuals with Parkinson's, you will hear in the latter part of this interview some dazzling suggestions that you can implement today that will make a huge difference in terms of being able to direct your attention to the places that are going to be in your best and highest good. It's really, I listened to the interview yesterday in preparation for the show today. I did some editing, and obviously I had to take out some dated material. But it is, I want to say to each and every one of you, an incredible interview. And it's well worth spending the time today to listen to this hour program. I also want to point out that both Nancy Welsh and Darlene Cohen are from a Zen meditation approach. So sometimes when they're talking about sitting on a cushion, they're talking about that lotus kind of a position that you see in Zen types of retreats. And that's only one form of meditation. There are many, many different forms of meditation, as Nancy very eloquently illustrates in her now newly released book, Medicine and Meditation. So we're celebrating the release of Nancy Welsh's book today, which is available in print form as well as in download form. And we're also celebrating the life of Darlene Cohen. Darlene actually died of cancer in January 11th, 2011, a very sad occasion for many, many, many thousands of individuals who attended her classes and were touched by her wisdom. So we're celebrating Darlene Cohen's life today, and you will hear, as you listen to her discuss the issues of pain and suffering and chronic illness and the ways that she's been able to figure out how she could live a viable and exciting and an energizing life, you'll discover that she is indeed a truly remarkable person that everyone who has been touched by her will now regret very deeply. So we celebrate her life, the life of Darlene Cohen, author of the best-selling book, Turning Suffering Inside Out. Again, this is Robert Rogers. You're connected to Parkinson's Recovery, and now what I'm going to do is play the first of two segments of this interview that was actually conducted 2 years ago. Again, not on my radio show, but on a teleseminar series that I actually was doing before the radio show was launched 2 years ago. So here is Darlene Cohen now, who author of Turning Suffering Inside Out. I'll do an introduction, as you will soon hear about her, and Nancy Wells, psychotherapist and a person who knows everything there is to know about meditation from Bellingham, Washington. Darlene Cohen is a Zen priest and Dharma heir in the Tsukumi Roshi lineage. She's head priest.
Suzuki Roshi.
That's okay. I'm revealing my ineptitude in this particular area. She is
head. Familiar with Zen in America, I take it.
No. Well, I'm getting a good education because I'm piggybacking on all of Nancy's wonderful work and interviewing many famous persons like you who are giving us all this wisdom.
You work with Parkinson patients, is that so?
That's right. The audience that's really listening here live to this discussion are individuals who are interested in everything that they can do to be able to get relief from the symptoms of Parkinson's. So,
do you have Parkinson's yourself?
I do not have the symptoms of Parkinson's. My mother was diagnosed with Parkinson's, and she died about 9 years ago. And my uncle, as we speak, has a very advanced stage of Parkinson's. So I have many different reasons for having a passion to be able to do this work at Parkinson's Recovery.
Well, thank you for your work. I'm very glad that someone is doing that. I have a very close friend. My immediate teacher, Michael Wenger, has Parkinson's. I had a very good friend at Green Gulch Farm who died of Parkinson's.
Green Gulch is one of the Zen centers in the Bay Area. It's a beautiful retreat center. And I'm sorry, you said he recently died?
Yes, Michael Sawyer.
Yes.
He's Norman Fisher's person that Norman talked about, I believe.
Right.
Yes.
At a previous
That's
interview.
Right.
So let me finish my introduction of Darlene here, and then be sure that I introduce the other voice on the phone that many of you probably don't know where that's from. Darlene is the author of three books on living with chronic pain and catastrophe, and the titles of those books are Arthritis, Stop Suffering, Start Moving. There's also a book entitled Turning Suffering Inside Out. Third book, A Zen Approach to Pain, and also
I'm sorry, Robert. That second book is Turning Suffering Inside Out, A Zen Approach to Pain.
That's the whole name of the book, rather than two books.
Right.
And then there's also a book titled The One Who Is Not Busy. And Darlene has taught at medical facilities and Dharma centers for many years. What I want to now do is introduce Nancy Welsh. Nancy is a mental health counselor from Bellingham, Washington, who is coming out this spring with a book titled Medicine and Meditation. We, as individuals who are interested in finding everything we can do to help with the symptoms of Parkinson's, are privileged to be able to join Nancy today in her discussion and interview and questioning of Darlene Cohen. So let me now turn over the discussion to Nancy Welsh. Thank you so much, Nancy, for being here.
Oh, thank you, Robert. I know that from actually reading your books and finding them a great source of inspiration myself, having had juvenile rheumatoid arthritis that has never gone into remission and continues into my 50s, and they still call it juvenile rheumatoid arthritis.
Really? Is it a whole different process?
A bit. Of course, there's much longer-term destruction of the joints, and there are some medicines, evidently, we're just finding out, because my doctors and I are going through different trial medications. What I've been on has not worked. There are some that actually address specifically JRA, or juvenile rheumatoid, that do not work with adult rheumatoid for some reason.
Oh, really?
Yes.
The biologics, you mean?
Yes, the biologics, such as Kineret. Kineret is a self-injection drug you give yourself every day, and it's been known to work with juvenile rheumatoid, but has not been of much help to adult-onset rheumatoid, and the doctors don't know why. It's just so evidently...
Fascinating.
It is, and there's a good friend of mine who's also put a chapter in our book, Lee Nelson, who is a researcher at Fred Hutchinson University of Washington Center, and her whole focus is on juvenile rheumatoid conditions and scleroderma, one of the arthritic conditions that is also can be fatal in the way that, as you said, your friend died from Parkinson's, and so she was able to give us some medicine information on it. I don't know if you heard that talk, but perhaps you'd be interested in reading it when this comes out, because she is really looking at the fact that juvenile seems to be somehow genetic from mother to child, generation after generation, although they're not quite sure. They haven't isolated the exact connection. She's written many articles, one most recently in Scientific America, on what's called microchimerism, which means you carry the cells of your mother and your mother carries your cells forever. Even though as you age, they deplete in number, they're in effect, you carry generations of cells within you, which Lee and I both found fascinating in terms of the interconnectedness of then, that, there really is no different. But if you would, talk a little bit about your experience when you were pretty, my understanding is you were a pretty healthy young woman studying at the Zen Center when you were suddenly laid low with rheumatoid arthritis. Do I have that right?
Yes, that's right. It began in my seventh year of Zen practice. My mom had it, but the two of us are the only ones in the family. So, it may have some sort of the process that you were discussing of mother to child and child to mother. I don't know, because it certainly isn't in anyone else in the family on either side. But the two of us have it. She had it. So it began in my seventh year of Zen practice, but the odd thing is when I first started sitting at the very beginning, I would swell up. All my joints would swell up. But, I was a young woman in my late 20s, and so it would just go away as soon as I stopped sitting. Like if I sat for 5 days, I would be quite swollen for 5 days. And the way I handled that is I just wouldn't eat. I just ate very little, so there was very little for my body to process.
And that helps with the swelling.
Yes, it helps tremendously. Fasting has probably been the most effective thing I've ever done for my rheumatoid arthritis, but of course it's no way to live, so I don't do it very often. I used to do it once a week. Anyway, it began in my seventh year of Zen practice, and it's the disease progressed, I became an invalid for about a year. And it was lucky that I lived at the San Francisco Zen Center because volunteers did everything for me, cooked my meals and cleaned my room and washed my hair and did my laundry and took care of my three-year-old son. I couldn't do anything for myself. Because of my pain and weakness, even changing my posture in bed was a dramatic event. Uh-huh. And when I had to get up to go to the bathroom, it was like going on safari.
Uh-huh.
So
that's a good way to put it.
You know, I would, you know, think, oh, I have to go to the bathroom and then prepare for about 15 or 20 minutes to get my weight onto my feet and legs. But I had already been practicing for 7 years when that happened to me. So, and as I say, other people took care of me. So I began to figure out how to get better. And as it turned out, my Zen meditation training was a very great help to me.
Could you talk a little bit about that, how that specifically was helpful? Because one of the questions that's come up for Robert from the patients he works with over and over is, how can I meditate when my body won't cooperate? And obviously you're talking about...
Well, you have to meditate with the body you have. Of course, you can't, you know, throw yourself into half lotus and sit for 5 hours without moving. I mean, that's ridiculous.
No, that sounds like death to me.
So I have developed alternative postures. In my book, Turning Suffering Inside Out, there's a whole chapter on different postures, and I've taught people in wheelchairs to meditate. I've taught people with chronic back pain and arthritis. So Vicki Austin, who's a wonderful yoga teacher at Zen Center, she used to be the president of Zen Center, she and I developed some lying down postures that have the same elements of alertness that the full lotus position has. So those are in my book, Turning Suffering Inside Out, and it, people call me from all over the country, you know, commenting on those and telling me how they've developed those postures to their body. And a student of mine who has very bad back pain, she can't sit for even 5 minutes on, you know, sitting up. Mm-hmm. She and I have developed a little booklet which we'll soon publish and send to all the Zen centers in the country in the hopes that people with particular physical problems will not any longer think that meditation is confined to a particular posture. I mean, there are certain conditions that have to be met, like a straight spine and alertness. You know, usually the trouble with lying on your back is you fall asleep, but we've built some things into the posture which keep you awake.
Yes, I've read about that, and it is very effective. I remember, when I first started practicing, it was extremely painful. I did try, I call it competitive Zen now. I knew I couldn't do lotus or even half lotus, but, you know, I would try to sit in a Burmese position where, you know, your legs don't actually cross, but your knees are definitely folded and you're sitting upright. And I was miserable. And the first time I met my guiding teacher, Norman Fisher, I had probably been sitting for about a year, and the first time I had an individual interview with him about how my practice was going, I just burst into tears and said, I can't do this. This isn't for arthritics.
Well, I'm astonished you did it for a year. You must be a very dedicated reincarnation of a llama or something.
Well, thank you. We did have a wonderful man up at as our shuso or our head student last year, John Bales, who said,
I know
John. Because I often do my meditation lying down, and that's what Norman told me, that he said, well, for Pete's sake, lie down. And I thought, that's okay. And he said, of course, the idea is focus on your breathing. But why don't you talk some more about how you meditate and how that works for you, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, I, you know, never had an easy body ever, but I was able to get into half lotus and sit for long periods of time. It just was always very, very painful.
Mm-hmm.
Even before I had arthritis, you know, I just have a very stiff, tight body, and I always did. I took dancing as a child and was terrible at it. You know, the teacher was always saying, you know, commenting that I couldn't do the splits or I couldn't do this or that. So I think I just had a body that was destined to become arthritic, and even though I was very athletic. So after I didn't sit. As I say, I developed rheumatoid arthritis my seventh year of Zen practice, but I didn't sit for about 5 years. And I did instead a meditation on movement that I invented. I imagine it's been invented many, many times before me, but it's a system which I've actually teach quite a bit now to people who have trouble sitting and who probably shouldn't sit still. It's you lay on your back and you do tiny little movements, very meditative movements. I do this during all the sesshins that I lead for ordinary people who don't have trouble sitting, as well. Very good.
I just wanted to explain. I'm sorry, Darlene. I just wanted to explain. A sesshin is a retreat that is usually several days, so it's pretty intensive. And in Zen language, it's called a sesshin or sesshin. It can also we also call it a retreat, where you just completely leave your sort of regular life behind and you focus on meditating. Is that a good way to put it?
Yes. Thank you, Nancy.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I later found out that there's a whole system of these little movements from the same point of view that I teach them. I have a master's in neurophysiology, so I always saw these little movements as neurological. In other words, the brain teaching parts of the body how to move, which is how I recovered from my being an invalid, was I just gradually taught parts of my body how to do movements that they couldn't do before. And I found out that there's a whole system called Feldenkrais movement that I seem to have invented as well. But when I started talking to Feldenkrais practitioners, they just were so good. They're so advanced in understanding neurological movement, and the fact that if you're a person in a great deal of pain, that the first step is to relax the nervous system. And so it turned out that's what I was intuitively doing with my little movements, and I did those instead of Zazen for about 5 years. And then I was invited back to Zen Center to teach. And I said to Michael Wenger and Blanche Hartman, who invited me back in to teach, I said, I can't teach Zazen. And they said, well, this is 20th century America. You can teach anything you want. So I discovered I could teach Zazen, and not only could I teach Zazen, but I seemed to have developed over that time that I was an invalid a very deep understanding of the physical mechanics of Zazen. I mean, if you can just sit down and plop your body into a full lotus, you don't have to understand Zazen. But since I had to develop all these alternative postures, I developed a very subtle understanding of the body's participation. So currently I sit in a chair, which right there, you may know, Nancy, right there is such a difficult way to sit meditation, but it's frequently the only way that many people can.
Right.
Every place you go, it's a different chair, so you're always reinventing it.
Yes,
so,
I usually bring a back support cushion. So many Western chairs are built for some reason with a back leaning backwards, which is not at all encouraging of a straight spine. And so although I understand, you know, with practice and more discipline, one can, of course, learn to hold their spine up. When I think of how little babies sit, you know, they're just so naturally, they sit on the floor with their little feet crossed and their backs are just in perfect alignment, and it's so lovely to see. And it's only, unfortunately, as we grow and perhaps get used to these strange chairs that encourage us to slump, that we start losing that natural just I believe if a baby does it, it's a natural posture for a human being to be in. It, you know, if they're illness free, you know, just a nice, comfortable, straight spine. And so I usually use some kind of support pillow because, like you say, every chair is different. Very rarely are they encourage a straight spine. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I usually get around that by either sitting on the edge of the chair so my feet are solidly on the floor, which I think is absolutely essential for chair sitting, that you have your feet solidly supported, you know, however you accomplish that. Another thing, like during a long sitting, like 7 days or so that I can sit back and have my back supported, I'll put a cushion under my feet on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, I can have that support over a long period of time.
Right, sort of shift the pelvis a little bit, which I've done too. It sort of gives a bit of relief there to the lower back. And
yes, and you don't, another thing you have to be careful of in a chair is you don't want your legs hanging down on the seat or it'll cut off the circulation.
Right, yes. And luckily I was born tall as well as arthritic, and so. So there's rarely a chair that I can't meet the floor with my feet.
Well, you are lucky with that because I was born very short, and it's rarely a chair that my feet will touch the floor.
That's so funny. Sometimes I just feel my knees are almost like up at my chin. So, yeah.
Darlene, when you said that you invented this approach of using little movements that rejuvenated your neurological system, people with the symptoms of Parkinson's are going to be fascinated by that. What exactly do you mean when you say that you began to do little movements as I was lying down?
Well, I think, of course, that this is physical and experiential, that people actually have to do them. And I would just refer people to a Feldenkrais class or my book, Turning Suffering Inside Out, has many, many of those movements, as well as my arthritis book, of course. In the arthritis book, there's actually a whole section on neurological movements. But what
it
is...
It comes with a CD, doesn't it, as well? That you can
It doesn't come with it, but there's two CDs you can order, as well as the books on my website.
Right, okay. I've seen them both. I've looked through them both or listened to
them. And
one of the
CDs called Meditation on Movement is 50 minutes of the little movements.
So are you saying it's rather individualistic? Each person has to sort of start from the basis of your philosophy and then work it to their own body?
Not really. These movements are so small that actually anybody can do them, and I think they can generalize pretty easily. I'm just saying that I don't think it's a good use of our time for me to start describing how they work on the program. A person is much better off either reading my book or going to a local Feldenkrais class.
Great.
We'll be right back with Darlene Cohen and Nancy Welsh after this short station break.
I'm Robert Rogers from Parkinson's Recovery. My guests today are Darlene Cohen, author of Turning Suffering Inside Out, and Nancy Welsh, author of the just released this week book, Medicine and Meditation. Darlene made a reference to Feldenkrais. Those of you who are interested in obtaining more information about Feldenkrais can find it in two places. The first place is here on the radio show page. I interviewed Irene Pasternak several months ago. She gives an eloquent explanation of what Feldenkrais is all about and even does and guides you through an actual Feldenkrais treatment. Be sure to listen to that program if you'd like to be able to get more information about Feldenkrais. There are also two videos that I have posted on the Parkinson's Recovery blog with featuring Irene, first of all, explaining what Feldenkrais is all about, and also Irene was actually working with an individual who attended the Parkinson's Recovery Summit that we held in March in Vancouver, Washington.
check out the blog. You can get there by going to the main website, parkinsonsrecovery.com, and you'll see a link to the blog. Click there. You'll have to scroll down. I've posted a number of videos from the summit, but Irene, you'll find, is going to be posted several weeks ago. Nancy Welch's book, Meditation and Medicine and Meditation, is amazing in all respects. What does it do for you if you're interested in actually reading it? Free yourself from the relentless thoughts of the past and the future. Learn to experience each current moment of your life to its fullest. You will hear my guest discuss ways of accomplishing that in the next segment of this show. Realize how learning to be mindfully present with each moment improves your ability to problem solve, to be basically more productive. Why am I so interested in making sure that you know as much as possible about meditation? The answer is that I have discovered through my research that stress has a direct and a profound impact on the symptoms. When individuals are stress-free, symptoms basically are inconsequential or non-existent. Question is, how do you become stress-free? This is an avenue to be able to teach yourself to go into that state of mindfulness and peace. It means that the more you can be in a meditative state, day in and day out, moment to moment, you're not going to be having many problems with symptoms, and you're not going to have to be worrying about pursuing therapies to be able to address your symptoms. Her book, Medicine and Meditation, explains what you need to know in order to be able to begin to adopt a regular meditation practice, whatever that might look like. Experience the peace that comes with accepting what is rather than what you wish it were. Discover that meditation is not about sitting like a stone Buddha. It really has nothing to do with that. Rather, the book really will help you find a way of meditating that is right for you. You're able to, in this particular book, receive multiple perspectives on the advantages of mindfulness. And this is a word that basically means being present in the moment. It's a practice that's actually becoming mainstream in medicine, psychology, and even in education. Why don't we transfer the wisdom of this from her book over to addressing the challenges of symptoms associated with Parkinson's disease. Understand that in this book, really, what others are referring to when they speak of mindfulness. Again, something that you're going to hear discussed in the next segment of this historic interview. Understand that the boundaries of our own control within the world, and to know that we can intercede and when we cannot. In other words, accept the reality of where we are at and what we can do in the world. Robert Rogers, Parkinson's Recovery. Nancy's book is titled Medicine and Meditation, and you can obtain more information about her just-released book by visiting the website www.medicinemeditation.com. And now back to the second and final segment of my pre-recorded interview as of 2 years ago with author Darlene Cohen and author Nancy Welch.
One of the questions from some of the members of Robert's Parkinson's site has written a question. It is Earth Zeber from Sydney, Australia. Forgive me if I did not pronounce your name right, but this person says, how can I best manage my time, my marriage, helping with household, medication, meditation, moving, and all with so little strength? You did mention you had help, but still, you had a three-year-old son, and he's going to want you, as I understand children, more than anybody else. So how would you respond to that person?
Well, first of all, you have to, I think it's very important when you're ill and when you're living with other people, like a family,
mm-hmm.
That you be as, that you do what makes you happy. That is the most important thing, because You need to, if you are debilitated and weak and in pain, you have to be happy.
Hmm.
Otherwise, you will just have a miserable existence because it's hard for other people to relate to you since you're so slow and weak. It's very hard for you to relate to other people who, because our culture puts such an emphasis on speed and acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
So this, in my family, my husband and my young son, it was very important that I pay a lot of attention to my pleasure.
Uh-huh.
And so I did the things that needed to be done, of course, taking care of my son and you know, the household thing, and very slowly and with a great deal of patience. My arthritis book is How to Do Housework and Dress Yourself from the point of view of being totally submerged in that activity, so that activity is deeply satisfying. I describe washing the dishes and folding laundry, smelling laundry, you know,
mm-hmm.
when you fold it, and washing dishes, feeling the soapy water on my arthritic hands was very important to me, that I enjoy these tasks. Because otherwise, you just are going to have a very miserable kind of existence. And people all, as I said, people already are kind of not including you in things. So
mm-hmm.
so you have to, so if you don't get everything done, it's more important that you do what you do with great joy. And I think the only way you can do that is to do it with your full attention.
So you're talking about very mindfully doing each movement,
whatever
it is. Yes, which is...
Well, I always tell clients and students, when you have a chronic disease or a debilitating disease, there are two arenas that you have to work in. One is you have to do all the research, see the doctors, do alternative therapies. In other words, you have to do something to stop your pain or stop the progress of your disease. Look, you know, go on the internet, do everything you can to stop it. But the second thing that you have to do is, at the same time, practice meditation and mindfulness to cultivate the mind that is willing to live with your situation for the rest of your life.
I know.
So this, go ahead.
Well, sometimes it feels almost like a lifelong prison sentence to people in my psychotherapy practice, because many of the physicians here in town know that I have experience, of course, with chronic illness, and I enjoy working with other people and children with, you know, who are going through the same, so that I can, you know, give them hope that, you know, their life isn't going to be a prison sentence of pain, you know, for the rest of their lives. And yet sometimes it's very hard to convince people of that when they feel so weak. And
well, you can't convince anybody of anything that way.
That's true.
You can only point to something that might help them, and then they make their own decisions. You know, would you rather live a miserable life, or would you rather, with the situation you have the most joyful life you can possibly have? I mean, for me, I was bound and determined, and still am bound and determined, to enjoy my life. That is number one for me. So, of course, since I'm very limited in what I can do, I just make sure that the things I do, I enjoy. And so these are all skills.
Yeah.
This is not something you know intuitively. They are all skills that have to be cultivated. And there are specific skills that are developed by meditation that I think are crucial to just having a life that you love, even if you have chronic pain and illness. And if you'd like me to to enumerate those skills, I'd be very happy to do it.
Please, yes.
As I said, I don't think you know this intuitively, so I think you have to cultivate skills. And one of them is being able to focus at will. And this is anyone who does breath meditation, Vipassana meditation knows this one. This is, you follow your breath, and whenever your mind wanders away from your breath, you gently bring it back. So over time, your mind learns to focus at will. You can focus on what you want to focus on. And the reason this is so important is because if you're in pain, pain is such a compelling object of focus that if you have not cultivated the ability to focus at will, pain will just hijack your consciousness over and over. You won't be able to do anything besides think about your pain.
That's a great word, hijack. I love it.
So you have to learn to focus at will.
Uh-huh.
And breath meditation, I don't know anything better than breath meditation practice to do that.
And that's what I also learned in, my Zen practice was just following your breath and counting your breath, one from 10, and then start over and really feel the breath going through your body. And as soon as you realize you're at 140 and you're actually thinking about the laundry, you go, oops, let's go back to one. And that's sort of what, it sounds like that's what you're talking about. You just really,
yes,
really focus, and you don't beat yourself up if you lose track, because that's not helpful. You just go back.
Just go back. I think of it like paper training a puppy. You just keep putting the puppy back on the paper.
Right.
Of course, you never hit the puppy or scold the puppy. The puppy eventually learns. And then the second skill, again, I think of shikantaza, the Zen meditation practice of just sitting and allowing a panoramic focus. Is the second skill, and this is actually essential to the art of living, is being able to include everything, not having a preference for, one string of thought over another string of thought, but just including everything. So this is like, I still, to this day, I never enter a room without looking around at the room and seeing what in this room will comfort and soothe me. And of course, handmade objects, handmade vases or a wooden room or a quilt, a handmade throw, a comfortable chair.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes, light coming in at a certain way. Even a hospital room. Now, you have to look pretty closely for hospital rooms. But sometimes there's a nice view out the window, and there's certainly pillows and things like that. And you have to, not compare it with other rooms, just be in the room you're in. But this ability to include everything is the second skill. And I
Without
think
judgment.
That...
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And that leads eventually to the refinement of consciousness. It enriches your pleasure in life exponentially. And the way that I usually explain that is that if you can think of 10 things that you're conscious of at any particular time, that's 10 things. Let's see, how can I describe this best? I describe it in my book. Let me try to remember how I describe it. This refinement of consciousness. It is that if you can notice 10 things, and let's say you're noticing the sound of my voice, you're noticing, that you're sitting, on a chair, you're noticing that's the sound in the background, you're noticing what you see out of your eyes and so on. You can get to 10 things pretty quickly, right?
Right.
But if pain is one of those things, that's too much. That pain, 1 out of 10, will hijack your consciousness every time. I mean, the other 9 things can't possibly offset the compelling quality of pain. But if you begin to include in your meditation all the things that occur to you, and you can begin to notice on a pretty consistent basis 100 things, like more subtle things, the shadows of things, as well as the objects, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
The animal presence, the sound of the air conditioner, you know, the difference, the temperature differences between one side of your body and another,
mm-hmm.
the brush of your clothes against your skin. So you notice 100 things, and pain is one of those 100 things. That's the pain you can bear.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I mean about refining your consciousness.
Right. It makes so much sense to not let pain be the primary focus, because for those of you who aren't real familiar with Zen philosophy, in a sense, all things are equal. Pain is pain, and the sunlight is the sunlight, and the shadows are the shadows. And if you can give equal attention, you'll find there are so many things you can let come in and out of your sensory perception that will be amazing if you let them. I know you know my guiding teacher, Norman Fisher. He often says, you know, let your thoughts just be clouds, let your feelings be clouds that just pass through an open sky. And one of those clouds can be pain. It might be a dark cloud. It might be a big dark cloud that hangs around a while, and at the same time, it will pass. And there's so many other clouds that can pass along with it. Like you say, the play of light and shadows, the beauty of the wood, the texture of the curtains, so many. I mean, just look around right now. I see a little funny little turtle that I brought back from Hawaii whose head bobs, and
yeah, that kind
a little
of thing.
Tiny Buddha I set on my computer to remind me to always be mindful. And yeah,
so that's what I mean about enriching your life exponentially. Your consciousness just gets more refined.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm talking about experiencing things on the level of the satisfaction you feel when you consciously put a cup on a table. You know, the flat surfaces meet.
Mm-hmm.
This is a rare and satisfying kind of experience. So it's the minutiae of everyday life, but now you're noticing it.
Yeah.
Mostly we just notice things that, you know, like if we're hungry, we notice where the food is, and if we're, you know, lonely, we notice where the people are. But I'm talking about noticing and observing everything all the time.
Yeah, really open mindfulness without getting caught in each thing, and yet allowing each thing to be present somehow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Being exactly here, as Katagiri Roshi puts it.
Could you say that again, please?
Being exactly here.
Yes. I do have a question. You said that it is important to look at the medical aspect of your condition and make sure you understand and do what you can do. What have you, or do you have medicine to help sometimes, or how? What's your thought on that?
When I got rheumatoid arthritis in the late 70s, they offered me a bunch of medicines that I was not interested in, because I was only 35 years old. I didn't think I could take prednisone or, I've forgotten the name of some of those things, some medicine that affects your eyes over time, and everything that
Plaquenil.
Plaquenil, right.
Yeah.
And my doctor was very honest, and I really appreciated it. He said, we don't have anything that won't destroy your liver and kidneys over time.
Mm-hmm.
He said, so you can probably only take these medicines for 10 years or so, and hopefully by then we'll have developed something else. And I thought, well, if in 10 years I'm going to have to go off these medicines, I might as well not start. So I didn't. I never took arthritis medicine until I was 60.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I was 60, old age had really caught up with my own efforts to handle this disease without medicine. What I was doing before was doing movement, you know, these little neurological exercises, and also swimming four times a week and walking every day. And I would say that my self-help program was almost like a part-time job.
Boy, it sounds like it. It sounds really good, too.
Oh, yes.
Really,
I have always been in great health for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it has all these wonderful side effects, like I didn't have to wear glasses anymore after a while, and I was hypothyroid before I developed rheumatoid arthritis, and after I started doing these exercises, my thyroid became normal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, you know, except for rheumatoid arthritis, I was great. But at 60, old age was really catching up, and I was slowing down, and I figured out I would probably have to do 3 or 4 hours of exercise a day to really keep up with the disease. So I said to my rheumatologist, whom I went to once a year, you know, to check out what was going on, he threatened many times to stop being my doctor because he was so frustrated that I wouldn't ever take medicine, but... Finally, at 60, I went in and said, okay, what have you got, because I'm ready for it. And he said, well, I got this these biologics, Remicade, he said, and Enbrel.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, do they wreck your liver and kidneys? And he said, well, they do a lot of terrible things to very few people. He said, you may not be one of those people. And I said, well, I'll give it a try, and I started taking Remicade. And what a miracle. I was so happy with that drug. It really made me feel like I didn't have rheumatoid arthritis. And, everyone commented on it, on how I was just moving around. And, you know, I had always hiked, but the way I hiked, if I went with a friend, they would hike ahead of me and come back, hike ahead again and come back, hike ahead again and come back, you know, like a dog will run ahead of you and come back.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Because I was so slow, you know. I'm willing to hike and I love to hike and all that, but I'm not really the best companion for it. But still, people, very compassionate people, would go out hiking with me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and even dancing, you know, I would go dancing and stuff like that. I mean, it's probably not the most pleasant thing to watch me dance, but anyway, the Remicade made such a difference that I could keep up with people. Nobody could believe this. My husband, who's walked with me down to the post office and all around the city for years, could not believe it. He could just do his normal pace. And I kept up. So that was great.
Are you able to continue on that? Or?
No, I had to stop when I got cancer because
right.
I actually, now, you know, there are no statistics on this according to my rheumatologist, but I actually think since Remicade and Enbrel both suppress the part of the immune system that prevents tumors.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think that if Remicade did not cause my tumor, that it at least enabled it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did have to stop. And now I have chemotherapy, which suppresses the immune system. And though it's not as effective as Remicade, it does keep my arthritis in check.
You have such a positive attitude given what you've had to deal with for so many years, not only arthritis, then to be slapped with cancer as well.
It's really unfair. I find it quite annoying.
Yes. There's times I want to shake my fist at, you know, the sky, wherever. I was raised Catholic, so I still sort of have a little bit of a God thing in me, and I just want to rail and say, why? And then I shut up because I know there's a reason, and I just have to be quiet.
In my case, I think that I'm not so sure there's a reason, but I've got to say, of all the people that I personally know to have all this happen to them, I'm probably the best person because I am very disciplined and I have a tremendous amount of vitality.
Oh, it sure sounds
like it,
yeah.
So, you know, if this had to happen to anybody, I'm probably the best adapted.
You know, there's one other question that came in from a woman in Pasadena, Maryland, named Rose Zweck. I hope I'm saying her name.
Who knew there was a Pasadena, Maryland?
I know. I almost wrote California until I checked. But it's Pasadena, Maryland. Is that correct, Robert?
I assume so.
Okay. She says that she has Parkinson's, and she suffers, it sounds a lot like what we struggle with, stiffness and pain.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, how can I relieve these symptoms? I also have pain in my feet with fine motor movement difficulty when walking. What
mm-hmm.
would you suggest? Now, that seems to perhaps go right into what you were talking about with these kind of micro movements.
I think the micro movements would be very good for her. Now, here's the thing. Here's the thing that I've learned is, you know, nobody likes to do exercises. In order to actually have a regular exercise time that you do, you know, at least four times a week or something like that, you really have to do movements that, A, you enjoy doing while you're doing them, and, B, they make you feel better afterwards. I never could have done mine that I have done steadily for 35 years every day. If I didn't enjoy them so much,
uh-huh.
and if I didn't feel so much better afterwards, you know that RA is the worst in the morning.
Oh, yes, I know.
I mean, I just barely get to the toilet, you know, now that I don't have Remicade to help and all. I just barely get to the toilet, and then I get to my exercise room, you know, and put down my mat and, you know, lower myself onto the floor, and then I start doing them, and within a half hour, you know, I'm a different person psychologically as well. And I've learned that the side effects of these exercises, because they're neurologically based, if I am in a snit about something, if I'm mad at somebody or mad over some event or inconvenience or whatever, by the time I'm finished with my exercises, I'm emotionally restored as well, because it's that little bit of space, you know. It must be similar to somebody sitting in a cafe drinking their coffee, reading, you know, the funny pages or something. I mean, it must be that kind of space where you just are enjoying yourself and you feel no pressure. I used to answer the phone during my exercises just to see how that affected them, and I don't do that anymore. It's just really good to have that time, just be feeling my body and feeling it relaxed.
Right, and not have this compulsion to sort of follow our Western culture of, oh, the phone's ringing, I must answer. That's something that's come up in some of my classes, you know, that I've taught up here in Bellingham, people, you know, looking at, you know, how to slow. It sounds like I haven't read your third book. I want to immediately about being busy or too busy. because this is such a busy culture, and I used to feel like if the phone rang, whatever I had to do, I must answer it, and I've learned that that's not true. If even somebody rings the doorbell, I do not have to answer it. It is not some...
I get so many phone calls that I have to limit them to 2 hours a day. I only answer my phone 2 hours a day. And I used to coincide that with my exercise just to try to save time, but it doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like your books would really be useful for not only arthritics, but people with all kinds of chronic pain. You mentioned you have to work with the body you have, and I know from talking with Robert and hearing the questions of the people from his website, they often feel that, well, how can I meditate when I can't stop trembling? Or
then you do trembling meditation. It's very easy.
Uh-huh.
You're going to do meditation, you have to do the meditation that you do that comes from your own body.
And accept that and be okay with it. Just accept it that this is how I do it. I know.
Well, if you're not okay with it, you're really setting up a pretty miserable situation.
I love your sense of the point of life is to enjoy life no matter what.
I really think that's the only way you can help other people is be an example of, especially in this culture right now,
mm-hmm.
As I say, that so emphasizes acquisition and speed, to actually be an example of someone who lives for something else and the pure joy of being alive. I don't think you can help people better than that.
That's beautiful. I forget that sometimes. As long as I've lived with this and as much as I've practiced meditation and even teach classes on working with meditation and pain, I still sometimes forget and feel that I must do more. I must be quicker. I must be the usual smarter, better, faster.
Well, of course, there's so many people that need help. Of course, I understand the pressure. I feel that pressure, too. Mm-hmm. I really feel bad when I have a huge backlog of people who've called for advice or, help with pain or something. But the thing is, what is very important, again, is to enjoy life so that people can actually learn to enjoy it from you. And if it's a few people that you don't get to right away, well, you eventually get to them. So, again, I try to have my state of mind be the most important thing that I'm taking care of.
Darlene, what do you say to the person who says, I have so much to do, I don't have enough time. There's just not enough time in my life.
Well, it comes down to your values. What kind of life do you want to live? Do you want to live a life on your deathbed? You finally say, phew, I got everything done. Or do you want to say, boy, that was a great life. I'm ready to die now. I did everything.
Oh, that's a wonderful philosophy.
We celebrate today the life of Darlene Cohen, author of Turning Suffering Inside Out, who died of ovarian cancer January 11th, 2011. This interview was actually recorded 2 years prior to her death, just 3 months ago. An amazing individual, an inspiration to any individual who currently experiences a chronic condition, an illness, or chronic pain. Darlene Cohen is one of the featured authors in the just-released book by Nancy Welsh, Medicine and Meditation. Other authors that you will find featured in her just-released book are Norman Fisher, Ruth Ozeki, Darlene Cohen, John Wiley and Carolyn Milling, Marsha Linehan, Florence Kaplow, Lee Nelson, Sandy Taylor, Paula Arai, Karen Cook, Tim Burnett, David Zucker, individuals who are professors, medical doctors, authors, and persons with incredible wisdom. I've been encouraging Nancy Welsh to finish this book now for several years. I was hoping she'd have it out now 2 years ago, but she has worked on editing and clarifying and enriching this book so that today, the day when it is actually released and available for purchase, it is a truly incredible and a remarkable book. You can get more information about her book, Medicine and Meditation, by visiting the website by the same name, medicinemeditation.com. I've also had a number of inquiries from individuals, from persons who are wanting to purchase the Parkinson's Meditations, which include 7 CDs as well as a written transcript of all of the CDs. So it's both for individuals who like to see it as well as for individuals who like to hear it. And many of you know I've been out of stock now for several months, but I was able to locate a company here in Olympia, Washington, who have now finalized the production of a new set of available CDs and the booklet. So it's now available. The Parkinson's Meditation series is now available. If you're interested, you can go to the main website. You'll find a link there. Or, of course, you can always call me toll-free. I'd love to hear from you. 877-526-4646. If you have a story to tell about what you're doing that's making a big difference in your life, please let me know. I'm always on the lookout for individuals to be guests on my weekly radio show. We air this week in and week out at 3 p.m. Pacific time, and the whole purpose, the mission of doing this is to be able to document the many different things that people are doing that are making a big difference. If you've done anything, you don't have to be symptom-free, that is making a difference and you'd like other people to know about it, please let me know about it. We can pre-record an interview with you, or you're most welcome to come on the show live and tell your story about what's making a difference to you. Many people are on the road to recovery, and they're figuring out ways to get better using different therapies, different modalities, and different approaches. My role at Parkinson's Recovery is to document each and every approach that's actually working for individuals. And of course, that is also documented in the second edition of my book, Road to Recovery from Parkinson's Disease. You'll see there previewed all of the many causes that have been documented that create the symptoms of Parkinson's. And what you'll see is a preview of the many different therapies that we've discovered through our research are making a huge difference in being able to give individuals relief from the symptoms they currently experience. We also answer a variety of questions that I've been asked over the last 4 years from individuals who want to know very specific answers to questions about various topics pertaining to the symptoms that they currently experience. Call me anytime. There's a toll-free number. Many people are surprised that when I answer, I say, "This is Robert. How can I help you?" We're not a huge corporation. We are basically an individual who are here to be able to provide support, information, and resources to any and all persons who currently experience the symptoms of Parkinson's and for individuals who are there to be able to provide support to them, spouses, family members, and friends. So let me know what I might be able to do to support you on your road to recovery, whether you currently experience the symptoms of Parkinson's or if you are an individual who is helping someone else return to that marvelous and magical state of full health and wellness. Yes, the body does know how to heal itself. It is indeed a miracle. All we have to do is to recognize that we need to set the intention to make it happen. So you've been connected today to Parkinson's Recovery and Robert Rogers. We will connect with you 1 week from today on the program that we will air, where we will be delving into the area of healing through visual images, through videos, from an individual who is a truly creative artist. So get ready for quite a fascinating show that previews for you ways that you can become a person who is able to heal imbalances in your body through engagement with healing videos. Isn't that cool? And that's what's happening on the shores of the Puget Sound, where all the women are smart, all the men are handsome, and all the children are truly loved. Know that by virtue of the fact you are listening to this radio show today, that you are on the road to recovery. May you have a marvelous week, and I look forward to connecting with you 1 week from today, Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. Call in, connect. We'd love to hear from you. Good day.